morning, Brother John.
Good morning, Jerry.
How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Got a nice day. It's going to be sunny. It's about the mid-60s. It's going to be a picture-perfect day in Chicago. And looking forward to getting out.
Yeah,
so, out and about.
All well, good. We're a little overcast here. It's actually gray. I got up early this morning around 4 and started prepping for everything and watched the sun come up and was hoping to have a nice daybreak, but it's not. It's a little overcast and for us a little humid. And they're talking about rain this weekend, so we'll see what happens.
Yep. So I was able to go to the ball game last night. That weather was just the first day I felt like I could actually wear short sleeve shirt to the game. Here we are, you know, just getting into summer, and then but the weather is you always got to be ready for anything here in Chicago. So
that's
last
true.
Night I felt very comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
So we got a lot of good stuff going today, don't we?
Wow. Well, is an unusual show. It's a one-topic show again. We do these every once in a while.
Yeah, and I just want to let you know, by the way, what shirt do you have on?
I happen to have on the Bro Show t-shirt, the second edition. For those who, you know, this is the only edition you can get right now. But those who collect them, you know, you had your chance with the first edition, but this one is stellar. It's my favorite shirt of all my shirts, and like you, I have lots of t-shirts, and people, you got to get you one of these, because number one, they're beautiful, number two, they're comfortable, and number three, it goes to my cancer fund, which always needs replenishing. It's expensive to have cancer.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and Medicare doesn't cover everything, at least
that's
not for me.
Sure.
All right, buddy. So today's it's a movie. Our big thing is a movie and it's a movie that features our friend Cancer and much more. Yeah. Well, okay. Number one, anybody out there listening, do you like Sam Elliott? Have you seen him in a movie and gone, wow, what a voice. I wish I could see more of this guy. You know, is there a movie where I could really watch him for a prolonged period of time where he just doesn't walk in, say something cool, shoot somebody and walk out or whatever? Well, here's your movie. It's called The Hero. This is John's fine. Tell us about
John. What happened was that I just happened to go through every about 4 or 5 times a year, a movie kind of grabs me and I say, this is one where I'm going to have to go to the theater and see. So this last week, or actually last Friday, saw a review on the Sam Elliott movie. It's an independent movie called The Hero. And I read a review. It was a 3-star review. And I got this thing about, I kind of like good movies better than these big blockbuster excellent. Sometimes you read reviews and there's no way that they can be as good as they say.
Right.
So the 3-star kind of captures me. So this is one that, and Sam Elliott in many ways plays Sam Elliott, not in terms of his life. There's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of dissimilarities. So, I'm the guy who, you know, you see him in The Big Lebowski and you say, boy, it's like I watched that movie and I think I was telling Jerry, I was thinking of, when I think of the actors in the movies, I think of them in this order. I think of them first. I think of Sam Elliott. Then I think of John Goodman. Then I finally think of Jeff Bridges, who's most of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing is that Sam's part as the stranger sitting there just sipping on sarsaparilla
which is another, wow. When's the last time you heard about sarsaparilla? Sugarfoot, right?
Yeah. So, well, what I think we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about Sam and segue into the movie itself, because his background is quite interesting. You know, you think that basically Sam probably was born on a horse, wasn't he? You would think.
Exactly. But, eating jerky.
But the bottom line is, here's a guy who's lived up, born and raised in Washington State area. His father was had a job at the Department of Interior. So Sam was attracted to the outdoors to some extent because of his upbringing. He had that going for him. And, you know, he stars in his, you know, the typical high school play. In this one, it was Guys and Dolls. And somebody says, boy, you know what? You're pretty good. You ever think about movies? And I kind of, you know, got the idea. And he says, yeah, why not? I think I'll just go to L.A., see what I can make happen.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was no idea of any other job. So he goes, and he goes to school at California State University, L.A., which I had to kind of do a little work on to say, now, this isn't UCLA. And I said, no, it isn't. They're two separate schools.
Right.
This one's, but the thing is, he doesn't graduate from there. He goes 3 years, and he, you know, does his theatrical thing at the school. And he then gets a job through construction. And, you know, sometimes it's that connection where he connected with one of the people that he was working for and said, well, would you do this to help me? And he needed to. And all of a sudden, it was a person in the entertainment industry. And Sam has got his foot in the door. And before you know it, he's a contract player, small parts. And his film career starts with Butch Cassidy in The Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
Which if you look at the credits, he's like second to last. He's the second card player. It's like, as he describes, he says, I was merely a shadow in the movie. And the reason he says that is because his only line in the movie, he says while he's not on screen.
Oh, wow.
So, well, I mean, I don't remember. If you remember Sam Elliott in Butch Cassidy, then you
Yeah, I do, vaguely. I have a recollection of it.
It's at the very, very beginning of the movie, apparently,
right.
And I'm just going by what I've read. So Sam's got his foot in the door, and he's in a movie, and right away he is kind of typecast as being a Western guy. And
oh, yeah.
If you look, yeah, and you know, with that voice and with that start, we find his career kind of, you know, going the way of, you know, first thing is, it seems like Sam has always been the kind of guy who's got a real, real good role, but he's never above the title. He's usually third or fourth
yes.
in the credits. He'll have a significant role, but not necessarily the main role. I think the first movie that really gave him a chance to do something, and this wasn't a Western, a movie called Lifeguard, where he has a chance to kind of, he's kind of stuck. He's in a rut in terms of his life. As a lifeguard, and he's trying to break out of it. And that's one of the exceptions to the rule. And it's a very early movie for him. It's like that movie was 1976.
Right.
As you take a look at some of the other movies, I think the one that sticks up in my mind is Mask. And this is more a typical Sam Elliott role.
Right.
It's not a Western role.
Right. Right.
But you've got Cher as the mother. You've got, I forget the name of the star that played the disfigured. Stoltz.
Yeah. Yeah, the redhead.
He plays the poor kid who's, you know, disfigured from birth, and he's going to and Sam plays the boyfriend.
Yeah, biker boyfriend, as I recall.
The biker boyfriend, exactly, biker boyfriend. But Sam's got a role that's very significant to the life of that kid, even
yes.
though he's not what you call. He plays a very significant part. So as he goes on in his career, he kind of balances himself. If you took a look at IMDb, you'd see 99 credits, 99 movies that he's – movies/TV shows he's been in. He's had a lot of balance between TV and movies. He's had a
right.
couple of series that have been short-lived that he's been in. He's portrayed any, you know, some Western Wild Bill Hitchcock, Sam Houston.
Yep.
He's done a lot of different – you know, so that's the way he's sort of gotten his – is you know, typecasting
yeah.
As a Western star. Now, what I found interesting was that when The Big Lebowski, this is 1998, and it's a point, you know, it's a pretty far along in his career.
Yes, it is.
But I find that he still kind of has the stigma when you read about him that he says, oh, thank God, finally. I'm going to get a good, juicy role in a movie that I'm not a Western star. And he begins to reading about it, think, oh, no.
Same old.
But I think it's a signature moment in his career where he realizes, rather than fighting it, embrace it. And that's what he does.
Boy, did he. That's a plum role. That is a plum role he had there.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers him. Do you have to curse so much? And you know, I have to say, living in Texas, you know, he's got a really great Texas accent and manner, you know. We have the kind of thing that he does here in you can go out once you get out of the cities, you know, that's what you run into, those guys. And so it's neat. It's neat. I enjoy watching him for that, if nothing else. But
yeah,
as it turns out, one other exception to this is he had a big role in The Contender. And number one, no mustache.
Ooh. That,
very rare. And number two, he did not play a Western star. He played chief of staff for Jeff Bridges, who was president. Well, you got to love that. You just got to love it. And I have to say, it's an A1 movie. Watch the movie if you've never seen The Contender. Great performances, including Sam Elliott's, who has some real moments in it. He gets to show his temper, which is fantastic. And also, he has some words with an FBI investigator that I thought were really wonderful, too.
If there's a second type of movie that role that Sam typically gets, it's sort of like he does get a few military roles. He was in The Hulk.
Yes.
So, yes. He does occasionally kind of spin off into this military thing. So that I would call.
But it's still a guy from the South, you know, the typical drill instructor, whatever kind of personality, right?
Yes, exactly. I also found a couple parallels that I found with respect to the movie. And we'll get into the movie, but one of the little things in that he does get this award for being a Lifetime Achievement Award in Western movies. And I find out that Sam Elliott got a comparable award. There was a thing called the Golden Boot Award. Now this award was given. It was an idea inspired by Pat Buttram, who was a sidekick to Gene Autry, in the Westerns. And Pat felt that there's a need to take these people who have done so much for Western movies and TVs and honor them, and also kind of put together a banquet that would then be a fundraiser for the Motion Picture Fund Award, which basically helps people in the industry that need financial help.
Right.
So Sam, back in very early, got the award back in 1990. Him and this is a cast. I mean, every year they give the award to, you know, maybe anywhere from 6 to 10 people. So it's not like he was up there alone or anything like that. But I thought it was kind of interesting that he did have a comparable award. The other thing that's you know, we hear Sam's voice, and we sometimes forget that Sam could probably make a nice living just on voiceovers. I mean,
he can make
a
great
lot of
living on voiceovers.
Yeah, just on voiceovers alone.
Well, what you have to figure when you think about a nice living is people don't realize this, but you know, it's. Revenue minus expenses. That's how you make a living. And so that kind of work requires so less of him in terms of output of energy and expenses that it's huge.
And
so that's plum work. And time. Time is, of course, very precious. So, yeah, I think that the people forget that. And that's one of the attractions. I mean, you can dress any way you want. You can look any way you want. All you got to do is say the words and say them right, and you're all set. Commercials are probably, if you think about it, you don't get much respect for doing commercials. But if you've got the voice, so to speak, you can get a lot of money for very few words.
Exactly.
You're counting.
And he's also, and you're counting, and I would be counting. No doubt about that.
I would be too.
But the other thing is he's done a couple things with animated features and movies too, which is obviously his voice fits the role there too. So that's another thing. Yeah. I looked at it in terms of his personal life. He lives outside of LA in a nice farm that's got animals and all that good stuff. So he kind of fits the role there in terms of, it's the kind of role thing you would think he would do. In addition to the fact that in terms of his Western heritage, he's been able to go back and find that he does have a relative or two, a distant relative who were at the Alamo. So he's kind of been able to hang that on his. But it's kind of.
It's a stretch.
It's a stretch. And I don't think he, you know, makes a big deal about it. But if people happen to ask him, you know, he might mention that.
Who did you have at the Alamo?
Yeah, who'd you have at the Alamo?
Yeah, they'll shut him up.
So, personal, Sam's only been married once. Got married in 1984 to an actress who was in a movie with him called The Legacy. That actress happens to be... Yeah, well, they were together then, but that was... They never met, you know, like... Catherine Ross is the person. Her claim to fame is The Graduate, and Butch Cassidy and The Sundance Kid are her main movies. And incredibly beautiful, sweet young girl in The Graduate. She, you know, a real outstanding looking woman. And yes. She is still to this day.
Yes.
And because she's in the movie too. But the fact is that Catherine Ross has been married 5 times, and she finally got the stick when she married Sam back in 1984.
Yeah.
And Sam is never, that's his first marriage. He sees,
cool.
He sees her and he says, this is it.
Right.
And
right.
They've had a great marriage. And the other thing that's kind of interesting, they've had one child, daughter, and who's a musician. So that's kind of, as we mentioned that with some emphasis, it's because in the movie, guess what? He has one daughter.
Yep.
So that was kind of interesting. So,
okay.
Yeah.
The movie.
That's Sam, the movie. The hero.
The hero is the movie. Yeah, if you have cancer, go see this. If you have people who love you and care about you and are trying to understand some of this, have them go see it. That's what I think. That's what I would say. And then, what is the hero? It's a very interesting movie for me, and I think for John too, in that one of the characters in the movie is his cancer. And he has something worse than either of us have. It's pancreatic cancer, and it's far advanced, and there's no treatment, basically, except for one pretty extreme procedure called the Whipple procedure. So, and he finds out about the Whipple procedure on the rebound after he gets diagnosed. His first reaction to getting diagnosed is, hey, I need to get some weed, because he's a big weed smoker in this movie, which he's not in real life at all. And so he goes to his dealer to pick up some weed, and I'm not going to walk through the whole movie step by step, but this is significant. He's just gotten his diagnosis, basically, and he's upset, and he needs some weed. And so he starts smoking a little bit with his dealer, who he likes, and of course, it's California. He could just go to a store and buy this stuff, but he likes coming there to this guy. And the guy says, right away, something's wrong, something's off. What is it?
Yeah.
And
he gives him the cue to say it, but
yeah, damn, gives him the opening.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to watch because John had seen the movie before me. And so he said, hey, the key issue is the tell, how this guy tells people about his cancer. John and I have been through this. Every cancer guy has been through it, or girl. And so, you know, who do you tell? When do you tell? What do you tell? And it doesn't stop there because you're going to have treatments and procedures down the road. And you got to decide about those too. So telling is a big thing. And the thing I loved about this scene was David Offerman, I think is his name.
His name is actually, it's Nick Offerman.
Nick. Wow, I was way off on that.
Yeah, Nick Offerman.
He was in Parks and Recreation with him.
Parks and Rec.
Nick Offerman. Yeah, he's a great guy and funny and good. So anyway, he's acting with him on this scene, and Sam, they capture Sam Elliott just right. He's got his head cocked. He's got his eyes, you know, and you don't get to see Sam Elliott's eyes that much in a movie, but you get a full view of him here, and you can see his mind working, and, you know, he's half stoned, he's half baked, but he's still thinking, do I tell this guy? Do I tell my dealer, my weed dealer? Is that who I'm going to tell first? Kind of, and he goes through all that whole thing. And then at the very last millisecond, he pulls out, and I had a dream. And so that was his excuse for being a little off. So he dodges that.
Yeah, I think the other thing about the movie is the setting of it and where he is at the point in time, in which is pretty important. And we have an aging Western film star who is, you know, is, shouldn't hold his breath waiting for his next role because it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, he's talks, first scene, he talks to his agent, and he's got nothing.
Yeah, he's got nothing, and two things happen. Number one, you see, and what I like about the movie is at the beginning of the movie, he's doing a voiceover for barbecue sauce.
Right.
And it's like he has to do it over and over again. And I kept on, in my mind, I kept on saying, keep him doing it. It sounds really good. I like it.
It's yeah, like, I'm getting hungry for barbecue.
Yeah, it's like Sam could be reading the telephone book in a movie and we'd be captivated. You know,
yeah,
that's how good he is in terms of his voice. Yeah, his voice is that good.
Yes.
So he's also told by his agent that he has been duly honored with the Lifetime Achievement Award of a Western Movie Association. So,
right.
And that's when he says, well, do I have any offers? No, but there might be one coming in. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So there's where Sam is in his life. And then he goes and he's hanging. He not only has a dealer, but he has a dealer pal who has a nice movie quirk. He likes Buster Keaton movies. All good. Oh,
John and I love Buster Keaton.
Yeah, you think a lot of people. Yeah, the fact is that you think Charlie Chaplin, but when it comes to some of the incredible physical genius things, Buster Keaton was the man. We could tell. There's some incredible stories about him and being able to set up roles, do these little things he did that made movies great. But back to the, so I like the idea we could be seeing Buster up there on the screen as they're smoking was kind of made
these guys
a nice
are
little
baked.
Touch.
They're getting the munchies. They're ordering noodles and fish sauce. You know, hey, you know, I just got told I've got, you know, not many days. Well, what the hell? You know, and so, he was already, you know.
And then what happens during this setting at the beginning is all of a sudden one of the drug dealer's other customers, a nice lady, played by Laura, how do you pronounce her name?
Prepon. Yeah.
She comes in wanting to score and some drugs. I'm not sure necessarily what hers were, but
they're mollies or something, some exotic street drug. Yeah.
So that's the first point in time when Sam gets a chance to he kind of looks at her, and it's a great scene. I mean,
it is a great scene.
I love that scene where he says, "Oh, you're staring at me." And he says, "Well, sometimes when I stare at people, I can learn a lot about them." And then she says, "What'd you learn about me?" He says, "I didn't learn anything about you." But he does it all real slow, looking at her. That
absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
But so for people listening to this, this woman, if you haven't looked her up yet, she is the redhead, the tall redhead in that 70s show, and she stole the show when she walked on that set. I thought she was really fantastic. She played a fantastic part. She plays tall better than any woman I've ever seen. And she is tall. Wouldn't you say, John?
She's tall.
At least 5'10".
Yeah. And
she's a looker. And she's still a looker.
Yeah. She's 30. She's like in her late 30s. So she's still relatively young as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah. By our measurement, by Hollywood set.
Yeah. She's still got a lot of mileage on her.
Yeah. But she looked good. She looked great. Her hair's darker in this. Her same blue eyes. And same dimples when she smiles and all that. She's got a great smile and great mannerisms and all that. And she just basically plays her as she did in that 70s show. So there's chemistry. And it proceeds from there. You know, I think a day later or something like that, he's buying a taco at this taco stand and leaning against the little wall there beside it, chewing it down. And she shows up to buy a taco.
Yeah.
So, kismet.
It kind of goes from there.
Yeah,
she plays an important part, but before she kind of develops, he has to think about who am I going to tell? And he makes
he's
an
still
effort.
Struggling. Still struggling.
He's struggling with it. At that point, Laura Prepon is not the person at that point in the relationship because it just starts.
Right.
But he then has to confront, he goes to his ex-wife.
Right. But it should be pointed out already, even the first encounters they've had, very straightforward, very honest.
Yes.
That's the hallmark of their conversations so far, when that figures in, I think.
Definitely. It does.
So, but now he figures family. I better go see my ex-wife, and, you know, I should tell her. I should tell, you know, he's got to tell someone. So he basically does the same thing he did with his weed dealer. He choked up and he said, "I have something to tell you." And he did the same, kind of did the same thing with the dealer too. And just, and he backs out. He goes through the same process and he backs out and says, "Gonna do a movie."
So, yep.
Didn't happen. Then he wants to, then he starts asking about his daughter. And then he goes to see his daughter, says, "Let's have dinner," you know, and she had some resistance. They have an estranged relationship. And he wants to fix it. And so I guess the next night or night after, something like that, they're gonna have dinner.
Yeah.
But reality intervenes.
Yeah.
Reality intervenes because he now ends up getting together with Charlotte is her name, I believe.
Yeah, Charlotte is her. Yeah, Charlotte's her name.
Laura Propone's name.
We ought to also Charlotte. Mention, because we'll probably interchange the names of the Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott's name in the movie is Lee Hayden.
Yes,
which is, somebody points out in one of the reviews, that's a combination of Lee Marvin and Sterling Hayden, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, but that's stretching.
It is a stretch, but it's kind of
Lee's a good Western name. Let's face it.
Yeah, Lee's a good name. So, so the thing is that, yeah, with respect to his daughter, he basically sets up that they're going to go out, and he doesn't quite deliver. He doesn't quite make it to that dinner. And he ends up asking Laura Prepon, played by, Charlotte, ask her to go to this Western Film Association banquet where he's going to be honored.
Right.
So, and that's where really they start getting a little bit closer together. And
yep,
that was a limo.
There's a limo ride over.
Yeah,
and you know they're drinking champagne, and she dumps a pill, one of the pills she got from Mr. Offerman, dealer, and you know, and then she kind of cajoles/dares him into doing the same.
Yeah.
And he does. So he drops some street drug that we're not really sure what it is. She calls it fairy something. Anyways, so it starts coming on when he gets there to the Western affair. And he's like very, very un-Lee Hayden. He loves everybody. And he's kissing folks and signing autographs and having the time of his life. And it's kind of fun to see, to tell you the truth. So uncaged. It's kind of like, hey, he got loose. He escaped the bounds of his character. And it's kind of fun to watch. And she's right there with him. She's
supporting him all the way.
And she's right there with him, which is key. You know, when he gets into a thing, she's right there. And to support and adopts a Western accent, makes up some damn cowgirl name. And they proceed into the evening until he has to give a speech. And now he gets up there and he's got to give his speech, and he's overwhelmed by the audience. Just like, you know, you guys are what should receive the award. You know, it's the audience that makes this stuff happen. And, you know, I don't feel like I was a hero or am a hero. I don't even think I should receive an award for lifetime achievement. I looked up achievement before I came over here, and I don't think I qualify. And so, and it's going all kinds of places, you know, his little talk. And he gets to the point where he has this woman come up and he wants to give her the award, and it becomes a big thing. And he says, y'all are the heroes. In fact, you're a hero. And he asks her name, has her come up. She's the woman who, you know, got her, got shot in, Clint Eastwood, movie about the assassination of a president. And anyway, long story, but anyway, we'd seen her before in some stuff, and she's a good character actor. And yeah, she comes up and she's a little shy and meek and opens up as he, you know, starts effusing and doing his thing. And it goes viral. This ends up all over the internet. In his career, he's starting to get asked to do parts and all kinds of good stuff. And so his life's kind of taken off a little bit. And she's got some stand-up comedy to do the next night. So he shows up there. And then she proceeds to do a stand-up routine that includes the details of their lovemaking and how low his balls sit in his scrotum. It's excruciatingly detailed about you have to pace yourself so you don't want to kill the guy.
Yeah, it's exciting because you don't know whether he's going to die or not as you're making love. She does it really.
The truth is, and she does say this in her routine, she likes older men.
Yeah.
Period.
That's probably the only truthful thing she said. In the routine, because the rest of the routine, she basically is using a situation and embellishing it to an extreme. But unfortunately, Sam had no idea that she was going to do that. And she invites him to the comedy, you know, place to watch him. And And he's just kind of mortified. He just can't believe what's going on up there.
She sees him walk out.
Yeah, yeah. So
pain and suffering. She texts. He won't answer. And so finally, she just comes out to his place.
Yeah.
And they had spent the night together when they got stoned at that award banquet, but never did anything. And so this is the moment of truth. And so,
yeah,
they actually end up making love, and it's really touching, really beautiful. You can tell she's a completely genuine, honest person. And
right.
It was lovely. It was really quite nice. And I don't always enjoy watching some of those because they're so unrealistic and they're so stupid. And they add sound effects and stuff that's so unreal. But this was completely real. And it was quite moving. I liked it. I thought it was a really good scene. So she ends up being his tell.
Yes. She's the tell, and I also at this point that they interject a poet, Edna St. Vincent Millay, and it's sometimes the things you learn in movies you just don't realize it's going to happen. And this one was a fact that burning the candle at both ends.
That's hers.
And so somewhere that poet is one of her poems. Talking about the fact that burning the candle at both ends, but at least it'll be very bright.
Yes. And that's how she lives.
Yeah. And so that's the first time they interject that poet into it. So I'm kind of a curious person. I kind of look up and see her life and this and that. And it's kind of interesting. Everybody kind of knows the name. But they can't attach it to anything specifically. Now I feel good that at least I can attach it to that one verse. But yeah, so he's now in a position where he's got a real soulmate he feels comfortable with. And he's told her. And she's the one who inspires him to do several things. One is to confront with your relatives what's going on.
Tell your family. And yeah, well, she handles it so well. It's so beautiful. I mean, she didn't go, oh, God, and oh, shit, and all that stuff. She just immediately got into, you know, who she was. And she was a genuine, honest, straightforward person. And she just doesn't hesitate. And she puts their entire relationship on the line. She doesn't know how he's going to react. He may tell her, you know, fuck you. You know, you're out of here. You can't tell me to do that. But she did tell him. She said, she made it real clear, two things. Tell your family. Call your oncologist. And get the procedure.
Mm.
That's it. Because this is a no-brainer. Yeah. And he goes back and forth with her about the procedure a little bit. But, you know, she had the overwhelming logic in the matter. And, you know, it's a Wayne Gretzky moment. You know, you miss all the shots you don't take. If he doesn't take that shot, the outcome is certain. He's going to die soon. So this could extend his life. And sure, it's one of those procedures that you would probably never want to have. And John, I can tell you about those, but, he then does as instructed. And, you know, they do a great job. I think the end of what we haven't said is during this movie, he goes back and forth between dreams and reality interchangeably without much transition. And the dreams seem real, except you realize he's in a Western movie half the time. Because that's kind of what he relates to. But now, toward the end of the movie, we're going back and forth between his 72nd birthday celebration with a cake and family and loved ones and her. And they're their conversations and walking, and he gets them a present, birthday present, which is St. Edna.
He's a collection works of Millais. Millais works, yeah. And she ends up reading a poem called something
Dirge Without Music.
Dirge Without Music.
Yes.
And that, to me, the poem kind of gives a good, it's sort of a struggle. It's verse by verse.
Yes.
It's one of them is how you need to, some ways accept death, but in other ways you don't want to, you shouldn't accept it. It's sort of like a battle between these two sides.
Yes.
And at the end,
the poet takes a side.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm not going along with this. And, right. You know, that is the key thing about the movie is that, this is where you're getting to the real crux of it is how do you handle these things? And so you have a choice. You always have a choice. You should not dodge the reality. You are dying. However, you don't have to go whimpering and whatever with your tail between your legs. You can stand up straight and
address it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's her MO. And that's kind of, and she reads this at the end. And this is where, you know, if you hadn't started crying yet, you are now, because that one really got to me something fierce. That was, and Mary Jane, my wife, went with me and she's there crying beside me. So yeah. And it's toward the end of the movie. So they go out with that and the movie is just kind of left. It's one of those great, you know,
it's a great ending because it leaves you. For the first thing I like about the ending is that you kind of don't know. You see the 72nd birthday, and up to that point, there's been enough of this like dream surreal stuff, interspliced, that you're accustomed to the way, the method that's going to be used. And one of the things to point out, the name the hero comes because that in his mind is the best movie he ever made. He's a one-hit wonder in terms of movies. And in addition to the fact that then he has these dream sequences dealing with the hero. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden at the end of the movie, we sense that is this 72nd birthday a birthday that actually takes place? Or is it a dream sequence which leads you down the path realizing he is going to get the procedure? He's going to basically live. He's going to do the best he can to extend his life.
Yes.
And I think the other thing you get out of it is the fact that his new relationship, not only does she encourage him, but you feel that there's some mutual thing there in terms of his wanting to live has a lot to do with her, not only in her encouragement, but herself.
Her fire. You know,
fire.
She's got it. So, I mean, she really does. This is the perfect person for him at this stage in his life. And he has trouble dealing with the age difference. She's just a little bit older than his daughter. And, you know, all that kind of, and she really does not give a shit about that. And she makes it perfectly clear. And does a great job, by the way. And so she wins him over, you know. She has to kind of, she didn't have to convince him. She has to pass the sniff test. You know, is this a kink that she's got?
Yeah.
Is this a star thing? Is it, you know, what is this?
Yeah, you might think, is this just another, you know, victory for me? Is this just another guy or is this something? Yeah, he is definitely, his guard's up.
Oh,
and he takes some convincing, and he should be.
Mm. But she does it very economically.
Yeah.
She does it with very few words. Yeah. And
very efficient.
But her eye contact, all that stuff, so solid, so straight. That this is something that, you know, this is so in contradiction, it's so different, contradictory to what he usually lives with in Hollywood and in his life in general, you know, it's like a fountain of youth to him in a sense.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, as we take a look at the whole movie, first thing is, it sounds like we've probably told you the whole movie, but believe me, there's some other incredibly good things that go on in it that we, you know, just don't have the time.
Yes. Right,
to
right.
Do. The other thing is that the movie has kind of gotten mixed reviews. I don't know why. I mean, it hits me pretty hard. It obviously Jerry hard too.
And Mary Jane.
And the fact is that, so when I came out of it, my reaction, very, very positive in terms of the way, what was going on. But I kept thinking, now, who am I going to really recommend this movie to? And Jerry, I think you hit it right on the head when you say, well, you know, you've got cancer victims, you've got families supporting people. There's a wide, but I don't, but on the other side, you got to remember that this movie is not exactly going to be the cup of tea for everybody.
Oh no.
This is a nice little small indie movie. And I was also thinking in terms of movies that this is comparable to. And I come up with a couple. One that I think is the closest is a movie called The Straight Story that starred, and it was, again, a movie where basically an older person carries a whole damn movie. In this case, The Straight Story is Richard Farnsworth trying to, and again, a lot of comparability with this one, but he's having to confront his estranged relationship with his brother. And the only way he can get there is by tractor, and it's like well over 200 miles. And it's just a life. It's a retrospective.
Riding lawnmower, actually. It's not even a tractor.
Riding lawnmower, yeah. And that movie, directed by David Lynch, is so out of character for him.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very, very kind of straight movie. And the other thing about it is that Richard Farnsworth, you know that he's towards the end of the road in the movie, but what you don't realize until later is he's at the end of the road in terms of his own life.
He's in his 90s.
No, he's actually like, I looked it all up. I'm a number guy. Yeah, he's like 80 or 81. He's not quite that old.
Oh, I thought he's older.
No, we'll talk a little bit about another movie where a guy's in his 90s. But he ends up having, he has bone cancer, and he knows he has bone cancer while he's making the movie. He becomes the oldest person to ever get a nomination leading actor in Academy Award nomination. He didn't win, but at the age of 80 or 81, and then the pain was just so great later on that he eventually committed suicide.
Right.
But that's an incredible movie. The other one, that one you've maybe heard of, but this is another one that I like. It's called Max Rose. It came out in 2013. This stars Jerry Lewis at the age of like 87. He's like in his 90s right now. Jerry Lewis plays a jazz pianist who his wife is close to death, and he learns by looking at a piece of jewelry that opens up, you know, it's got something in it. He sees a piece of jewelry that he didn't give his wife that basically is got another man's name on it. And he's wondering, what has my life been with this woman who's basically been my life? What's going on here? So he does a very retrospective thing. And it kind of reminds me of this one because you got Jerry Lewis believe me, if you're looking for comedy, forget it. This is a dramatic role. And I mean,
which
Jerry
he does
Lewis
great.
Has done, he does, and he's done it before. He did it in the movie with Robert De Niro. Forget
King
the name
of comedy.
Of it. King of comedy. So that's a different kind of role, but still, it's dramatic.
Yeah.
He's playing.
Oh, yeah.
So Max Rose, it's another one that you can get on Netflix, I think, but its distribution was extremely limited.
It's a classic.
And by the way, it is a classic, and you see Jerry Lewis with all the warts. I mean, there's no makeup. There's nothing. You're looking at a guy who looks every bit of 87 years old in the movie, and he does an incredible job. So those are the two I think of. I think the third one is kind of a distant because it's more of a glossy thing, and that's the Henry Fonda on Golden Pond. Is a little bit, but I actually think the first two, because they're indie movies and they're more like this, and they're more carried. I mean, the movie with on Golden Pond, you've got Henry Fonda, but you've got Katharine Hepburn and you've got Jane Fonda. So you got a lot of people carrying that movie. But when you're talking about The Hero with Sam Elliott, or you're talking about The Straight Story with Richard Farnsworth, or you're talking about Max Rose with Jerry Lewis, they basically have the movie on their shoulders and they're just taking everybody else for a ride.
Yep.
That's how much they are into it.
Yes.
So, as we take a look at how it affects us, personally. It's mind-boggling. You feel some of that sense of it in terms of telling. And I think it's every person does it different. Now, Jerry and I talked about this and said, well, he kind of struggles a little bit at the front end with respect to the cancer and telling people, while my challenges have been not so much telling initially, but talking about progress. In other words, talking about the little hiccups that take place. And so,
never stops because the treatment never stops.
Exactly. The treatment never stops. There's always going to be a couple of bumps in the road. Now, is this a bump you tell people about or isn't it? Then you think, it's like right now. And I haven't told Jerry this. I said, I got to tell my mother.
Right.
I haven't done that yet. And I'm going to probably do it in the next. Obviously, I'm going to have to do it in the next couple
procedure.
Of days.
You're having a procedure. And the question is,
who do I tell? The thing is that at this point, I've had radiation. And quite often, radiation comes with side effects that are, they're not like chemotherapy where the side effects are immediate. Radiation is one where you might have some immediate effects, but you might also have some long-term effects. I've got a little bit of scar tissue that's getting in the way of in my urinary tract, and to me, part of the frustration and the anxiety lies in the fact that you don't know exactly what's happening.
It doesn't hurt you till you lay down, because if you're standing up, then you've got enough pressure to get through.
The problem is that with my situation, it's comparable to what Jerry's had too, is that once I stand up, I feel an urge to go because gravity is basically taking place. And because the scar tissue is made basically the urinary tract for me, the size of a large needle versus when it should be the size of a straw.
Right.
So, that pressure I feel as I get up because of gravity.
Right.
But the fact is, it's the anxiety. So I've gone through and I went through, it's not a urinary infection. My bladder's emptying. I'm okay there. So finally they put the old flashlight up there and took a look and say, aha, there it is.
Yep.
There's the scar tissue there. And
that's
so
what they thought
it would be. They did, really. I mean, I think they tried to eliminate a couple other things before they went right for the gusto and figured it out.
Yep.
But for me, the fact is it was a sense of relief because now I know what it is. It's a very correctable thing that in virtually all the cases is done once and it's over with. So I'll have an outpatient procedure and we'll go from there. Now the question is, when people say to you, well, how are you doing?
What do you say?
Where are you going with this?
Oh, it's a terrible question to begin with. How are you doing? It's just, there's really, everyone handles this differently. John and I kind of handle it a little differently probably, but, my approach is just, it depends on how mean I want to be to tell you the truth. The thing about it is, I'm a nice guy, really. But this has changed that. And the change is I don't have time for this shit. That's the change because I have a number. And now I know, hey, quality of life means a lot. Bullshit does not mean a whole lot. And so someone asks me, I'm going to give them the full detail and probably make them a little sick, but they're not going to ask again unless they really mean it. Now, every once in a while, somebody asks, like Joe's friend Christian, who, by the way, incredible guy. Joe's friend Christian, couldn't get a hold of me after he found out I had cancer because he's in prison. So,
jeez.
Right? Yeah. So this guy finally gets a hold of me, pays a fortune to talk to me because these prison phone systems are expensive. And he wants to know how I'm doing, if there's anything his family can do to help me. He said, just look, if you need anything hauled, we've got a couple trucks. Just call my brother or call my dad. They will help you because you are on the list, and don't worry about a thing. And he said, how's your cancer going? And I just told him. And he just went right into it. Didn't hesitate a second. And asked me all kinds of questions about my orchiectomy and all kinds of really good questions. And it was kind of like he was the medicine, I needed. And I just got to drain all my wounds. and he took it all. So, you know, there's a thing here, and these are opportunities and some are not opportunities. Do I tell? Do I not tell? I usually, my MO is I don't expose people to the real drama, which is what John said. I don't know what the fuck is going on. You know, that I don't share very much. It's sometimes not even with my wife, because she's got enough on her plate. We lost our son at the same time I got cancer. So her plate is very full. So I'm very cognizant of that. Maybe babied a little too much about that, but you know, so be it. I don't always tell it. And my mother, for sure, she's not going to get the drama. She's going to get the bottom line when there's something that's known. And that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's like, you're going to have something tangible to tell somebody. You can't say, well, I've got this symptom and we're kind of, you know, going, doing this or that. No, that's not the right time to tell, because you're frustrated because it's so open-ended.
Oh yeah. And there's only a couple people you can tell that to. The drama, what you're going through, the not knowing and all that stuff. I've only got a couple people I can do that with. John's one of them, of course. And my buddy Sean. But I mean, you know, it's really tough. But the tell itself, when you know what's going on and everything like that, I blurt it out. I'm pretty much, if they're going to go there, then I'm going to take them with me. And a lot of times they give me that TMI look, too much information. And that tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah. Right? And here's my pet peeve. My pet peeve is the person who says, if you need something, don't hesitate to call me. Don't hesitate to call me. You hear that so much that your temptation is, well, you'll be on my long list because I've gotten a lot of those. And I have my other short list, which I will be calling. Yes. That's what you want to say to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know the people that they're genuine, they're constructive, they will say more than that. They will give you ways that they want to help you rather than saying, well, you know, making it just so open. That drives me nuts. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's my pet peeve.
Yeah. Everybody has them. And you know, I get that too. But the funny thing is I live in a community where I've known everyone here sometimes for 40 years. And so we all taught transcendental meditation together, a lot of us. So we go way, way back. And when those people say that, they really mean it. And so when I was getting my procedure and going through my stuff, they were here. I mean, people would show up unannounced with a pot of food. Someone would call me. I'm at the grocery store. What do you need? And I would just tell them, and they would just bring it over. I said, wait, what do you need? Oh, no, you're not paying for this. You know, stuff like that. So that's the real thing, you know, and that's what you want. That's
and
what you want.
Fortunately, I had people on a short list. I had people I know would step up and deliver.
Mm.
And they were very serious about it. And that's
what you need.
And I have that short list of people that I know I can really count on. And those are the people I go to.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, you have this conversation with people from time to time. I remember just like last week I was talking to mom and, you know, she's something was bothering her. And I said, well, you know, you can tell me this stuff. I mean, that's what I do. That's the son I am. John's good at this. Jeff's good at this. I'm good at what you've got right now. So I'm the guy you come to with that. And so she opened up, and you know, it was very fruitful, very good for her, and also very good for me. So, you know, these are good things, these interchanges, you know, these things you have with people when you can help them. And that's what I think is so good about this movie, is it is a chance to really get immersed in the feelings that you have. And they did a great job of portraying it. The movie colors were a little, I wouldn't say muted, they're desaturated a little bit, just a teeny bit. And if you weren't a graphics person, you wouldn't even notice. But that's California, and that's Los Angeles, and it's colorful, and it's beautiful. And that's the ocean, and that's gorgeous, and those are the beaches. And everything just a teeny bit desaturated, because Sam Elliott, the character he's playing, is desaturated.
Yeah.
He's a little dim. So, you know, you get that. And John, you said, I think you brought up a good point about film noir in this regard. It's got a flavor of that.
It has that flavor, but not the, but not necessarily the type of story you'd have. But the actual cinematography makes you think of that.
Yes.
And it's really it fits the theme of the movie well. I mean,
yes.
You've got a situation that is grim, but it's got you feel some hope at the end of it. You don't feel despair. But you know that there's an edginess in terms of what's going on, and I think that you're right that the way that the visual really fits it very well.
Yeah, very well. So, what can everybody do to get involved? Buy a T-shirt.
Yeah.
How simple is that? You've got to wear clothes, right? Everybody's got to wear clothes these days. So, get a T-shirt. Get a beautiful T-shirt. Get one that's going to help someone with cancer and help fund a podcast that really addresses these issues head on. You're not going to hear this stuff anywhere else. And you're not going to hear about the fake news and about movies and about sports like we talk about it, because, number one, we don't give a shit. We're going to tell it like we think it is. And we notice things other people don't notice because of our life circumstances, but also just because of who we are.
We are quirky guys.
Yeah.
We look for the unusual in a basic story. And
always
try
that.
To find that angle, which is like Jerry said, you're not going to find everywhere.
Nope.
But yeah, what you got to do, two things: you got to buy the T-shirt. Then, if you can find a place to wear the T-shirt to the movie,
absolutely.
Do.
Boy, I have a lot of fun with the T-shirt. You would be surprised. I was in a bank just about a week ago depositing some money, and man, the teller just went, "Oh, I love that T-shirt. That's great." I said, "Well, my brother and I do this. It's a podcast." He said, "A podcast? That's great." He said, "I'm a real podcast nut. What's your favorite podcast?" I said, "Well, other than the Bro Show," and I named off a few things, and there's stuff that he listened to too. We had a lot of stuff in common. We had a great conversation. Walking out of the bank, and he yells after me, "I'm going to tell people about your show." So
yeah,
wear the T-shirt with pride.
So Jerry, how would you exactly, we've talked so much about the shirt, but basically we got to go to the website, the www.thebro.show.
Show. Yeah, that's where you get all our podcasts. But
right.
If you just want to go straight to, and there's links all over the place there for the T-shirt. But if you just want to go straight to the T-shirt, I got a little subdomain that I use. It's called shirt.thebro.show. So it's just like our main domain, except instead of www, it's shirt. So couldn't be
got
easier
it.
Than that. Shirt.thebro.show. So do it.
Sounds all good.
Right. Good talk, John.
Oh, thoroughly enjoyable, no doubt.
All right. Well, I will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Talk to you then, Jerry.
Bye.
Bye-bye.